If you have an order of service, you'll see the title assigned to this morning's message, What Jesus Wants You to Do. What Jesus Wants You to Do. And there are many good and important things that we could be doing or might be doing. And the number of things that we could possibly do that are good and beneficial to ourselves and to others, the number of good things we could do sometimes can overwhelm us. I often lament how little of what I want to do I'm actually able to do. I'm one of those individuals who has a to-do list. I actually write it out with a little square box next to it, and when I do that thing, I check it off. And the list that I write for myself each week is quite long. But I lament that all the things that I want to do, very rarely am I able to do them. Well, if that describes you at all, it's possible that you're now bracing yourself for a sermon like this that is going to suggest that there is something else for you to do. Your plate is full. Your to-do list is long. You've come to church on Easter Sunday, and now you've got someone standing before you who's going to suggest there's one more thing to do. Most of us are thinking, well, I don't need any more on my plate. I don't think I can handle any more. Some of you are thinking, well, why don't you just close this book up? We'll sing a few more Easter hymns and we'll be on our way. But the thing that we're called to do, I'm going to suggest this morning for the Christian person is the most important thing for you. That Jesus, in His instruction in this text, tells us the most important thing for us to put our energies to. I deduce this by the nature of the command that Jesus gives to His followers, but I also deduce this by the timing of His instruction. The command Jesus gives in Matthew 28, 19, and 20 is the last piece of instruction that He gives to His disciples. Jesus had died a gruesome death, nailed to a cross. But on the third day He rose again. And at various points after His resurrection, He appeared to the watching public. He appeared to His disciples. And over a course of a number of days, He gave them instructions. In the text before us today, what we have is the final instruction, the final lesson that the resurrected Christ gives. And these last words of Jesus are commonly referred to as what? Referred to as the Great Commission. The Great Commission. And it can be broken down into smaller parts. But I'm going to submit to you that there's a very simple and straightforward way to unpack the Great Commission. I would submit to you that there is one primary activity that Jesus is prescribing for all who would want to follow Him. And the one prescribed activity is this: the task of making disciples. The task of making disciples. Like branches on a tree, there are other activities that connect to this activity. But the main thing is the prescription to make disciples. Well, I don't want to take anything for granted this morning. And sometimes we hear these words and we're not always sure what they mean. Well, what is a disciple? What does it mean that Jesus had disciples? What is a disciple? A disciple, quite simply, is a student. We have students in the room here today. And in a manner, the students in this room are disciples of their teacher. The word disciple can also refer to an apprentice. And I know in the various trades that a person could aspire to, before you become a professional tradesman, you take time as an apprentice in that trade. That's what it means to be a disciple. And in Jesus' day, a disciple would follow their rabbi around. They would follow their rabbi with the hope of learning their rabbi's teaching. And by their close proximity to the rabbi, they would begin to do the things that their rabbi would do. They would become like him. Well, Jesus was regarded by many as a rabbi in this manner. Jesus' disciples had left their careers. They had left their fishing boats. They had left their tax collection booth. They had left their lives, their families, to follow this rabbi named Jesus. But then he died. He was crucified. And they all scattered. But then he rose again from the dead and appeared to them and spoke to them. And then he arranged for a meeting with them up on a mountain in Galilee. And risen from the dead, he gives his disciples one final set of instructions. Make disciples. Make disciples. Just as I taught you particular things, teach other people these things. Just as I lived my life in a particular manner, encourage others to live in the same way. If the goal of being a disciple is to become like Christ, the goal of making disciples is to help other people become like Christ. Boy, I can't think of a better summary for what I'd like our church to be about. I'd like St. Andrew's Kirk to be about a group of people who are interested in being like Christ. And along the way in this journey of trying to be more like Christ than we once were, we make it our aim to help other people become more like Christ than they once were. I want our aim to be to make disciples. Well, that begs the question. Whose job is it? Who is going to be in charge of this procedure? Who is responsible for making disciples? Now, if we try to answer this question purely based on observation, what we see church to church, we might say it's the task of the pastor to make disciples. You might look up at me and say, well, we send you a stipend every month. Surely that means you've got some disciple making to do, young man. Let's get to it. Or maybe you look around, you see there's a professional missionary couple in our midst here. And maybe we think, well, we've got a pastor, we've got some missionaries. Let them do this work of disciple making. Or maybe you look around and you see various elders of this church and you imagine, well, it should be the work of the church elders. It should be the work of the session to make disciples. But who does Jesus give the task to? Who does Jesus charge with this responsibility? He doesn't assign the task to a group of credentialed professionals. But rather, he assigns the task of disciple making to 11 rather ordinary men who are only marked by their commitment to follow him. These were average Joes, if you will. There was nothing particular, spectacular, or impressive about them. You could argue there were some unimpressive things about these men. But this is who Jesus assigns it to. So my question to you this morning, are you similarly committed to following Jesus? In some measure, do you consider yourself to be a disciple? Because if you are a follower of Jesus, if you regard yourself in some way to be a follower of Jesus, then making disciples is your primary work. It's the primary thing you're called to. Jesus exerted himself during his earthly ministry. He exerted himself developing disciples. And then at the end of his earthly ministry, he essentially turns to his disciples and says, "It's your turn. I'm going away now. I'll be spiritually present, but physically I'm not going to be here anymore. It's your turn. Everything I've taught you, you have to teach to others. Everything you've seen me do, I now need you to do. So what does this all mean for us? What will disciple making look like? What are the components? What are the pieces of disciple making? If this is our primary work, we want to make sure we have a common understanding of what disciple making is. And don't be afraid by the fact that I've got six disciple making components to share with you. We'll go through these rather quickly. There are six, at least in this passage, six components of disciple making. The first is this. Disciple making is authorized by the King of heaven and earth. Disciple making is authorized by the King of heaven and earth. Have a look at verse 18. Then Jesus came to them and said, "All authority in heaven and on earth has been given to me." So this is huge. Think of it for a second. Let's shrink this down to something less compelling. Let's imagine the governor general or the prime minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas gives you a letter and requires you to do something by law, by virtue of their authority. Will you do it? Just so long as you want to live as a free person in this country, you do what they say. The governor general, the prime minister says you must do something, you do it. Queen Elizabeth sends you a letter. You're urgently needed for her service. What do? You oblige. Why? Because of her authority. Because of her influence. Well, Jesus, before he gives his disciples any instruction, says, "I want you to know, I'm in charge of everything. I'm in charge of heaven above and earth below. I'm in charge of this universe. And on the basis of that authority, I need you to do some things. And you have my permission, you have my blessing, you're authorized to do them." The second component of disciple making, and I love this one, this is a newer one for me. Disciple making requires us to be on the move. Disciple making requires us to be on the move. Jesus says, "Go and make disciples." And that first word is pivotal. We're to be in motion when we're making disciples. And I don't know what your observation has been, but mine has been that the Christian church in our day has been marked by great complacency. We've been marked by stillness. You look at the posture of the average Christian church, and you would think that the mandate is simply to welcome in those who happen to come through our doors. Jesus' mandate wasn't kick the doors open, pray for a few to come in. His mandate was to go. Don't wait for them to come to you. Go after them. I want to share briefly an anecdote from my own ministry and the principle that I've learned as 16 years, and I know that's not a long time, but 16 years as a pastor, this is what I've learned. Going promotes growing. Going promotes growing. I've had three charges over the course of 16 years. One was a rural charge north of Toronto, Ontario. The second charge was a larger congregation in West Toronto. And then here I'm almost at my fourth anniversary here in Nassau. And it took me a long time to learn this lesson because there's immense pressure on the pastor to manage the machine. You come into a church and it's got committees and it's got bylaws and it's got rules and it's got traditions, and you spend a lot of time and energy managing those and finessing those in a way that doesn't upset anyone too much. But very early on in my ministry here, as I began to have an awareness of the need for Christ, that was just in our backyard in Bain and Grantstown. The need for Christ in the lives of the young men and women I was interacting with in the community. It occurred to me that maybe this is the more compelling place to exert ourselves. Maybe instead of just managing the machine from the inside, maybe we need to go and do some things. And the neat thing is, the less time we worked in here, and the more time we worked out there, the more in here got better. And the more in here grew. It's counterintuitive. Usually you focus on something and the thing you're focusing on gets better. But what we've experienced is the more we focused on something else, everything in here got better. Why? Because going leads to growing. And going is an essential component of disciple making. Thirdly, disciple making is inclusive. Disciple making is inclusive. Christianity has got to be the most inclusive looking religion on earth. And you know, I hesitate to use the word religion because religion means doing. And we believe that Christ has done the doing for us. But Christianity is inclusive. Jesus says, don't go to any one group of people. Don't go to any one kind of person. But he says, go into all the nations. And we learned a few months ago from a visiting missionary that the word for that's translated all nations can be also translated as people groups. Because within every country on earth, there are people groups, there are tribes, there are neighborhoods. And Jesus essentially says, go into every area and every region and find every people group and share the gospel with them. It's inclusive. Fourthly, disciple making invites a public commitment. He says, make disciples, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Now, I can't go into a long talk here about why we baptize children and adults in this church, and while other churches only baptize adults, but what I can tell you is that in obedience to Christ, baptism is always public. In some instances, when it's an adult being baptized, they publicly declare their allegiance to Christ. And in the case of a child being baptized, the parents profess their allegiance to Christ, and on that, their child is marked with the sign of the covenant. Disciple-making invites a public commitment. It's a good and important and necessary thing that we call people forward and we ask them to say out loud in the presence of other people, I believe in Jesus and I will follow him. Disciple-making invites a public commitment. Fifthly, disciple-making invites lifelong learning. It invites lifelong learning. How do I know this? Jesus says, make disciples, teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. So it's exhaustive. Jesus doesn't say, you know, I taught you guys a lot of things and you didn't write everything down and your memory isn't the best, so here are the highlights and just give them the highlight reel. No, Jesus says, teach them everything. And earlier on, he said, don't worry, my Holy Spirit will help you remember them. But teach them everything. Give them the whole list. Every single one. And I don't know about you, but I'm a slow learner. So if I'm going to learn a body of instruction that immense, it's going to take my whole life. I'm going to have to spend the rest of my life in this book to be the kind of disciple that I need to be. Disciple making invites lifelong learning. And sixth, disciple making, and I love this, disciple making is powered by Jesus. It's powered by Jesus. Can you imagine if Jesus stood there and he said, I'm going away, there's no Holy Spirit to help you, you're on your own, I hope you took good notes, off you go, make some disciples. He doesn't do that. He says, I'm physically going away, but my Spirit will be with you always. Surely I am with you always. How? Through His Spirit to the very end of the age. So we're called to do something that is probably a little bit intimidating. You might be sitting here thinking, oh, I've never discipled anyone. I don't know how this is going to work. Why couldn't He call me to do something I've at least done before? Don't worry, disciple making is powered by Jesus. Surely I'm with you to the very end of the age. He promises ongoing assistance. Now, there's still a good chance. There's still a really good chance. Even after those 6 points are on the board, there's a good chance you're still feeling reluctant. You're not sure what to do with this information. Well, here's what I'd like to recommend. Make every relationship you have a disciple-making opportunity. Make every relationship you have a disciple-making opportunity. What do I mean? I'm thinking of the parent. I'm a parent of an 11-year-old. I'm thinking of the parent who invests so much time making sure their child's homework gets done, that the projects get completed on time. The parent of a child is always working to drive them here and there to every kind of activity, sports, music lessons, and the such. Parents spend so much time investing in their children. Well, what does disciple making look like in the home? It means spending a proportionate amount of time talking to your children about Jesus. You help them with their homework. Help them to understand the Bible. You talk to them about manners. Pray with them. You drive them here and there. Take them to Bible study, to youth night. Use your home as a disciple-making opportunity. I'm thinking also of those of you who are in the working world. You run a business or you work in a business. You're employed by someone. And in the Bahamas, more than anywhere else I've ever lived on earth, there are opportunities to express your faith. And in Canada, you get in trouble if you talk about Jesus at work. You want to get reprimanded in a hurry in Canada, in the workplace? Talk about Jesus, especially in a government building. But here, it's welcomed. It's almost expected. You walk into the average retail store and they're playing hymns. I mean, this is a Christian-friendly context, which makes disciple-making for us a little bit easier because it's not offside to invite your coworker to come to church with you, to invite your coworker to come try a Bible study that's been helpful to you. I'm thinking of individuals who frequent this kirk. I'm thinking of individuals who've maybe spent many decades in this church. What does a disciple-making opportunity look like for you? Well, I look out here and I see people who've been here their whole life. And I see people who are maybe here for the first or second or third time. And they're looking for an opportunity to connect to a group of Christian people. If you are a long-time member of this church, your discipleship opportunity is as easy as turning to the new person and saying, "Hi, my name's so-and-so. You want to go for lunch? Do you want to come over to my house for dinner?" We have discipleship-making opportunities right here in this room. I want to think of another one. One that's proved more successful for me here than when I was in Canada. And it's, think about the places you frequent during the week. If you're like me, you get your hair cut at the same place, you get your clothes dry cleaned at the same place, you eat at the same place. Maybe you're thinking, that's not at all like me, Bryn. I'm actually all over the place. I try different things. You should do it. But no, I'm the type of person, I do the same thing in the same way at the same time, all the time. I am a person of routine. If you're a person of routine, I'm inviting you to leverage your routines as opportunities to share the gospel. And think about those of you who dine at the same restaurants all the time. Now there's a hitch or a condition on this. I've had waitresses that have served me in a restaurant show up at the Kirk on a Sunday morning simply because I've invited them. I've shared with them a little bit about what we're doing and what we're about. And I said, "Why don't you just come out for yourself and see on Sunday morning?" But the little qualifier is this. Whenever I make that invitation, I make sure I tip very well. And I'm not just trying to be funny. That's an important component because sometimes Christians have a reputation of being tight with their money. So by virtue of you giving a monster tip, you've got their attention and they might think that you're really different, that your Christianity looks really different. But seriously, leverage those regular relationships, tip well, and invite them to come out. I know that sounds like bribery, but I call it disciple making. And the reason I share these real life experiences or these real life opportunities is because I wouldn't want us to ever think that discipleship can be reduced to a program. What I don't want to happen is one of you to pull me aside after church and say, we need a discipleship program, discipleship 101, we're going to have it on Wednesday nights in the Aeneas Parlor at 6 o'clock. Discipleship is not about setting up a program. And this is why it's achievable for you. It's not about signing up for a program. It's about leveraging the things you already do and leveraging the people you already know and interact with. It's moving within your normal routine and seizing opportunities to share Christ with people. Making disciples should be a natural progression of the relationship you have when you begin to see that person the way Jesus sees them. Because remember, you're representing Jesus in this world. So between your home, between your workplace, between your social circle, there are probably many discipleship opportunities for you. But I want to identify an exception. And this is how you're going to get let off the hook. This is how you're going to get let off the hook in terms of discipleship making. It's possible that there are some people in this room right now who are thinking this. Before I can realistically expect to go and make disciples, I need to be a disciple. Maybe some of you, as I've been talking, been thinking, I can't begin to make someone else become a disciple because I'm just kind of getting started with me being a disciple. It's possible you've been flying solo with your Christianity up to this point. And what you are realizing is that this is a group venture. It's not a me and Jesus thing, but it's a community endeavor. We need one another in order to grow and progress as Christ-following disciples. It's one of the earliest lessons I learned as a Christian. Is that if I go at this Jesus thing alone, I'm going to be a dreadful Christian. Being a part of a group of people who want to be like Jesus will help you grow and progress. So your take home today is going to depend on where you're at with Christ. If you're at the stage where you just want to be a disciple first, your take-home is going to be different from the person who's tracking closely with Jesus. If you're tracking closely with Jesus, if you're consciously trying to live for Him, your mandate, your take-home is crystal clear. Go and make disciples. Help other people be more like Jesus. But if this is new to you, if your Christian experience has been limited to an hour and a quarter on Sunday morning, your take-home is different. Your take-home is find someone to help disciple you. Your take-home is, as an apprentice, to find a mentor. Find someone who will help you walk more closely with Jesus. And theoretically, if there are a bunch of people in this room who now know, okay, I got to make disciples, and you got a few people saying, I got to be a disciple and find someone, there should be a recipe for matchmaking here. A bunch of people who feel the need and calling to go and make disciples, and a group of people who are feeling the need to be discipled. I hope the phrase making disciples doesn't scare you. I hope the phrase making disciples doesn't intimidate you. Disciple making in its simplest form is a call to invest in people. It's a call to invest in people and then to tether those relationships to the relationship you have with Jesus. So we invest in other people through the natural rhythms of our life, but we invest in people tethered to the relationship we already have with Jesus. Friends, this is what Jesus wants you to do. And based on the timing of when he said that, that might be the most important thing that Jesus wants you to do. He wants you to make disciples. He wants you to help other people be more like Jesus. Amen.